Alrighty, well, I'll call you back now. I'm interested to hear, what was your one thing? What is your one thing? Steady. What is something, whether it was from this morning or through this week, that is just staying with you or stood out for you?
That the locked door is
the quenching of the spirit. Oh, very good. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm still loving last Sunday morning, your rendition of Adam and Eve.
Oh, you're just basking in last Sunday. Right. Well, excellent. It was very good. When you come out of that, you can get the CD for this Sunday. Right, yes, that our emotions come from within us. They're not put inside of us. Yep, very good. I see the hand at the back.
I was really stoked that I am actually able to follow some of your advice yesterday and say, I'd really appreciate it if you turn TV off now.
Right.
Rather than what I started, well, I actually had to go back and read the script.
Right, right. Don't you think you've watched enough?
Well, can you get kids breakfast and take me into the loo and get to a back inside and
right.
With not owning what I was feeling.
Right.
And actually going with an eye in front of it.
Yeah.
And it was much more effective.
Great. How did it feel to do it?
Empowering, actually.
Well, very good. Yeah. Anyone else?
How you're talking today, it's very passionate, Bert.
Great.
I'm still listening. I won't get it really, but I want to feel good in my spirit.
So. Oh, right, great. Great. Good.
Overreactions as a marker for something that's historical?
Well, can be, yeah. Well done, yeah. That the overreaction you're doing now actually says a whole lot about what has been, not necessarily about what is. Otherwise, we'd just call it a reaction. Very good. So what I want to talk to you tonight about, of course, I have plans to do way too much with you tonight, so we'll see where we end up. But I want to at least give you an understanding of the way the mind works. I showed you the sort of principles of finding your emotional allergies, your bruises. But at this time, I want to talk to you about the way the mind works and how to take the elevator to the basement. Now, one of the things that I want you to just sort of get in mind is that I don't expect you to get this straight away. What I want to do is introduce you to this idea. And if you can pick it up as we go, well, that's wonderful. But this is something that I teach my students and I work with them to refine the process. So if you think I'm not fully getting it or I'm struggling with it or I don't know where to go at this point, that's fine. That's normal. So can we all lower our expectations just to something that's sort of normal? And I think we'll all be fine. So when we think about the way the mind works, one of the analogies or one of the images that we can use is that of an iceberg. Does anyone here know how much of an iceberg you see poking through the water? 10%? What, someone else? 3%? Anyone else? 20%? Anyone else? Yeah, I have no idea. But what we know is that you only ever see a small portion sticking through the water, eh? And that the bulk of this beast lurks beneath the water. And you see, in many ways, that's the same with your life. What we see of you, or what we see happen in your life, is but the tip of the iceberg. The majority of why there's a tip poking through the water at all is because of what's lurking below the surface of your life and your mind. Another analogy or image that I use when it comes to the mind is that of a tree. That you can have a tree that's planted in the ground and you can see the leaves, the branches, the trunk. And in many ways in your life, what you see is your behavior that comes from you, what you do, what you say. you might be able to pick up on just how you're feeling. And if you're really clever in listening in, you can even hear the chatter that's going on in your mind and what you're telling yourself. But of course, if the plant is sick, where do you need to look? At the root system. Thank you for playing. But what we're going to work with tonight is another image. And that's of an apartment block. Today I gave you the image of a house. And the Holy Spirit entering the house and entering into every room that's open. But I want you to think of your mind like this. It's like an apartment block. And at the top of the apartment block is your behavior. So you think about the way you are generally in a day. You think about the way you may speak to someone. You think about the job that you apply for or the job that you don't apply for. When you think about the conversation with the person you have or the conversations you know you need to have but you're refraining from them. That's all an expression of your behavior. Now, if you got in your elevator and you went down a floor, you would come to another level in this apartment, and it's called your feelings. You see, primarily, why do you do what you do? It is because your emotions put pressure on you to act in a certain way. So for argument's sake, if you were feeling intimidated, what might your behavior look like? Defensive, and how would I know that you're defensive? What would I be seeing in behavior or hearing? Arms crossed, yep. Attack verbally, or yeah, someone else? What's that, sorry? Back away if you're a bit intimidated, yep. What else?
You'd hyperventilate.
You might hyperventilate, yep. That's good. Anything else?
Avoid,
yep. Placate. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So, but let's imagine that what you're feeling inside is you're feeling just you're just feeling excited. You're feeling excited. What might be the behavior that would come from you then?
Jumping up and down.
We've got some pogoers, the jumpers, yeah? What else?
Exuberance.
Exuberance. So how would I know you're being exuberant? What would I see?
You'd see passion in me.
Passion and, yeah, animated. Yeah? What else?
Big smiles.
Big smiles. Yep. Yeah. 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 Louder and faster. Yeah. Or even higher pitched. Yep. Yeah. That's good. And now, so if you got in your elevator and you went down another floor, this is where you come to your self-talk. And your self-talk is the chatter that's in your mind constantly. You're always sort of talking to yourself. When you do the dishes, you're chattering away. As you're driving, you're chattering away. As you go to work, you're chattering away. As you're watching and engaging with TV, you're chattering away. Your brain is chattering away to you right now. You might be sitting there going, I'm really tired, or this chair's uncomfortable, or how is that guy so good looking? You could be thinking of all manner of things that are going through your mind. And this is part of the chatter that just happens constantly. Sometimes you're conscious of it, sometimes you're not. I had one person say, I had to stop myself because as I was folding the washing, I realized how much hatred and horrible words I was saying as I was doing this. But I hadn't ever realized it. So one of the keys to greater mental and emotional health at one step is to listen into what you're telling yourself. And you see, what you're telling yourself by and large will generate how you're feeling, and how you're feeling will generate your behavior. So when you think of it, how easy is it to be telling yourself, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're horrible, you're not going to amount to anything, you're stuffed up again, and be feeling excited and happy? It's hard, isn't it? And equally, it's really hard if you're telling yourself, you know what, you're great, you're good, you can get through this, it's no problem, and feel down. It's just really, really hard to do that because it's what we tell ourselves in our brain that produces the feelings. You see, one of the things to recognize is every thought you have is a chemical. And as you start to feel, it's your brain interpreting chemicals. In the same way, when you hear, you have sound waves that your brain interprets. And so when you feel, it is your brain's interpretation of chemicals in your mind. Interesting, eh? And so what you tell yourself will produce how you feel, and how you feel will by and large put pressure on you to behave in a certain way. Now that's generally where people end. They stop. That's as far as they go. And they may try to change their life by changing their behavior and doing behavior modification and going, you know, I just shouldn't do that, and maybe having a rubber band that they flick on their wrist. You may have people who try to change by changing their feelings. Do you know what? I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a big slice of cake, and that's just going to make me feel better. I'm going to put on some Hillsong and just dance my way out of this. I'm going to do something that makes me feel better. Or they may say, do you know what? Oh, all the stuff that's rubbish in my head. I'm going to tell myself I'm a nice person. I'm okay. And you know, and doing any of that will help for a time. But then the basement starts to put pressure on what you're believing. And in the basement, it's also what I refer to as the boiler room, because it generates the atmosphere and the heat for the whole house. There's a number of things down here, but I just want to call it one thing, just so that we don't get too confused. Oops. And that's your assumptions. So your assumptions underneath the surface are what you believe to be true without even thinking of it. So you may believe a whole number of things, and you've never actually questioned it. In fact, perhaps you're not even conscious of it existing in your life. But when we dig down, when we take the elevator down, we find down here a belief that's lurking, that's setting you up. So we'll always have beliefs. We live our life based on what we believe and what we've concluded. You can't be without a belief and conclusions in your life. This in many ways is like the programming of the mind, the conclusions that you've been left with. So when you think about it, if we were to use an example, if you imagined you saw someone running through the airport, and the behavior was that they were running, they were panting, they were pushing through people, and they wanted to get to the front of the counter. What do you think they're feeling?
Anxious.
Yeah. What do you think they're telling themselves? We're going to miss the plane. What else?
My needs are more important than the other people that are about.
Yeah, that could be there too. Yeah. What do you think is a basement level belief? What do you think's underneath all of this? I mean, if I said, so what if you're going to be late? Why is that so bad? Yeah, but what's the belief? I'm going to waste my money, and wasting money would be horrible. Yeah, what else? I deserve to miss the plane? No, not if they're running, panicking. I don't think that they would be doing that. That might be a different mindset that's there. Yeah, I'm going to let someone down, and I'm meant to meet, and you know, it's just going to muck up my life. This won't be pleasant. This will disappoint people. This will cost money. This won't be good. That would be a general belief that they may have underneath the surface. And you see, what you believe will generate all of this. And what I've got here that you guys can have, there's about 20 of these. There are double sets in here of king lies, basement level beliefs that you can have. Because I want you to get an understanding, and you can take them afterwards, I want you to get an understanding of what are the kind of lies that we can believe. And one of the lies we can believe is to trust nobody. That no one is trustworthy. I can only rely on me. And so that if I can only rely on me, then I must be in control of whatever's going on. And in fact, what I'll believe in that is that my security is dependent on me being in control. That makes sense, doesn't it? If I'm not in control, then I'm not secure. Something's bad. But it means I can never really rely on you or rely on others. It may be that in the basement level, there's the belief that I can trust anybody. Everyone's trustworthy until they prove otherwise. Have you ever tried that with a used car salesman? And you know, when it comes to trust, the truth is that people are only trustworthy as they prove themselves to be trustworthy. That trust does make us vulnerable and it can be scary. But it's only as we can mitigate that trust as we test someone as to whether they are trustworthy. We qualify someone to be trustworthy. Some of the lies I've spoken about over this week and even today was, one of the classic ones is that my worth is in your hands. And so that if my worth's in your hands, then I need you to like me in order for me to feel good about me. And if you don't like me, then I don't feel good about me. I don't want to disappoint you. I don't want to let you down. I don't want you to reject me. I don't want you to criticize me. I don't want you to correct me because my worth's in your hands. But of course, if your worth is in someone else's hands, they can take it away at any point. And you just have to dance whatever dance you need to do to keep them happy. It's very tiring. There is only one who can determine your worth. And he's in love with you. A basement level lie could simply be that my worth is in my performance. That what I do will determine whether I'm okay and I'm acceptable. A basement level belief may be that all events are God's will. Now that's actually an Islamic belief. But if you hold that belief, then what do you make of it when women are raped and children are molested? Was that God's will? That's not the God I know about. If all events were God's will, then we would not pray, "Our Father in heaven, holy is your name, your kingdom come on earth, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." That would just be a ludicrous prayer because it is being done. But what we know is the will, what's taking place on this planet is not the perfect will of God. If it's not in heaven, he doesn't want it here. Some people believe that it must come easy to me. That life success should just come easy. That I shouldn't really have to try. That if I have to try, if I have to persevere, then it's obviously not really for me. Some people believe that if I love them, then their feelings are my responsibility. Because if I love you, then I've got to look after whether you're happy or sad. And if you're sad, and I need to do something about it because I love you. No. Their mood is their responsibility. How you treat them is your responsibility. Some people believe that my feelings are an accurate guide to reality. So if I feel it, it must be true. This is just the way life is. Some people believe that I just don't belong here. You know, I enter a room and I know instantly, I don't belong here, I don't fit here, I shouldn't be here. There are many basement level beliefs, but one of them that I come across a lot is that I am powerless. That someone else has all the power and I have none. And that's where we fall into the victim mindset. Some people have the belief that life must just be fair and just. And if you have the belief that life must be fair and just, you know you're one of these people because you keep a rule book in your head. And you know you keep to the rule book and everyone else should keep to the rule book. And when they don't keep to the rule book, well, that's just not on. Because I have to keep to the rule book, you should keep to the rule book. The only problem is no one else knows about your rule book. It may well be that you believe that my choices have no consequences. So I'll just do what I feel like. I don't know if you've ever seen, not that I have, the movies advertised called Jackass movies. They're guys who do stupid activities and risk their life. I think one's been seriously injured now. But one of the beliefs they have is their choices have no consequences. Many babies have been born because someone believed my choices have no consequences. Some people believe that to grow up, to be an adult, would be dangerous. There are all manner of basement level beliefs that we can have, and all of them generate the way that we are. Now, I've been doing a bit of talking. I'm going to get you guys to do an exercise. This will keep you awake, if nothing else. So what I want to do, can we pass out these handouts there? Well, we've also got the double setters. If you take one of these, take two sheets because they're different, and then pass them on. I've got I did 40 of those. Just did what I was told, Mac. But there's also these here if you want to photocopy more. As they've been passed around, do you have any questions? Are you getting a sense of what a basement level belief is? Because in many ways, it's a statement of fact that this is how life is. It's a succinct statement of fact about how life is. Frank.
Yeah, Richard, I find myself oscillating between a number of beliefs.
Right.
I'm maybe not sure which would be the main default.
Right. Well, there's two things there. One, you can operate under parallel thinking. So you believe one thing in one sense and another in another sense. And so you operate in a double-mindedness. But another thing that can be underneath that is there can be a belief about, what if I make the wrong decision? Why do you oscillate? What would happen if you stuck with one? Oh. It may be a rhetorical question, or you may be able to answer it. You can just think about it.
Richard, some of your comments seem to me to what you call as lies seem to have some elements of truth or be close to truth. And I would want to sit with that, just giving some feedback, and work out whether I think that that's actually true or whether there's some closeness to truth in what you've described as lies. So somewhere there must be some underlying level of truth. Where do you get your choice of what's truth, and how do you determine whether you're making a statement that is true?
Okay. A number of things here. It's a good question. We're going to get into this later, but we'll do it now. How do you know what is truth? Well, first of all, truth will be in line with what is revealed in Scripture. The second thing is, because God is truth and Scripture is truth, so it will never be against it. But what we understand to be true may not actually be fully recorded in Scripture, because Scripture doesn't record everything. The other thing is that when you put on truth, truth enables you to be adjusted to life better. It enables you to be able to function healthily. Because when you apply truth, you're applying the language of God, who is the one who made you. So the way I see it is that if I put truth on like a pair of glasses, I will see more clearly, I will feel more accurately. And in many ways, one of the ways you can find the truth is if you thought, if what would God's perspective be right now? Or you could ask yourself, if the best mum and dad, not your mum and dad, the best mum and dad sat beside you and gave you advice, what would they tell you? More often than not, that's a good indicator of where truth might be. And so truth will always lead to health and functioning rather than dysfunction. And the ones that I said now are ones that clearly all lead to dysfunction. So, with us running wildly out of time, I want to teach you the journaling process. This is a very targeted journaling process. So if you've got your pieces of paper there and you've got your numbers 1 to 5, we're going to use this as a means by which to take the elevator to the basement. And so the first one, number 1, I want you to write down beside number 1, The feeling I want to explore is... dot, dot, dot. And I'll come back and I'll unpack all of this. The feeling I want to explore is... dot, dot, dot. So write that number one under the journaling. Yep. Number two, the thoughts connected to this feeling are... Number one, the feeling I want to explore is. Number two, the thoughts connected to this feeling are. And number three, the assumption driving this is... dot, dot, dot. Number four, the truth here is, or God's perspective here is, either's fine. The assumption driving all of this is, number four, the truth here is, or the God's perspective here is, and number five is, the challenge before me now is, dot, dot, dot. So the way this works, it looks like this. When you get yourself stuck in a situation or something's not good, first of all, you might be able to identify a feeling. And it may be a vague feeling, but there will be a feeling there. Some blokes I meet will tell me, I've never come across a feeling in my life. Whereas, in fact, their life is driven by their feelings. So identify what the feeling might be. You may even want to draw, you know, those happy faces? And there's a happy, or it's a sad face, or it's a squiggly face, or it's a question-faced. So what is the feeling I want to explore? See, I remember when I first did an exercise like this, one of the things that I remembered had occurred during the day was I'd been asked to partner up with someone for a counselling exercise. And I remember thinking, I didn't like that. And so I thought, well, what's the feeling inside of me? And the feeling I put down was apprehensive. It was really just anxious. And then I thought, so number two, what are the thoughts connected to this feeling? And another way of putting that is, if the feeling could talk, what would it say to you? And usually here you have about a paragraph, a small paragraph, of the chatter that's in your mind. Now for me, the chatter went like this. Well, what if I ask them and they say no? What if I ask them and they say yes, but they mean no? Yes, I was very screwed up. What if I ask a woman? Will she get the wrong idea? Do I have to ask a man? So that was the chatter that was causing me to feel anxious or apprehensive. Then when I went, okay, so what's underneath all of this? Now, the way you get down to what's underneath all of it is you ask the question, so what? Why is that so bad? Until you can't go any further. So at that point, I thought to myself, okay, I don't want to ask them because they might say no or they might say yes and mean no. So what? Why is that so bad? Well, I don't want to hear a no from them because that will feel like they're rejecting me. And if I hear a yes, but they mean no, this is all ticking through my head, then that will mean that I'm obligating them to be with me. They're not really wanting to be with me. So they're doing it resentfully. They're rejecting me. So I'm going, well, this is a common theme here. I feel rejected. So what if I'm rejected? So I kept digging. And I went, ah, well, my worth is in their hands. Bingo. Here we go. That's why it's such a problem. And so I kept asking that question, so what? Why is that so bad? Until I couldn't go any further. My worth is in their hands. So do you see what I did there? A feeling. I feel anxious. If the feeling could talk, what would it say? Oh my goodness, what if they say yes and they mean no and so forth? It's the chatter. It's the chatter of your mind. But so what? Why is that so bad? So what? Why is that so bad? And then I arrived at the basement level where I found, my worth's actually in their hands. And when you find the lie, when you find the assumption, there's something in you that goes, yeah, that seems to be about right, yeah. Doing the process to begin with, you're going, oh, yuck. Well, is that what I'm thinking? Oh, I can't believe I'm thinking that. And then you get to that. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm assuming. And now the truth. How do you find the truth? So if the best mom and dad could sit beside you and they could give you advice, what would they say? If you're going to look at this from God's perspective, what would you say? What would the truth be here that it just helps you see the thing better? And for me, what I recognize, well, why is it? And the truth here answers back to the lie. Why is it that my worth isn't in their hands? Why should I not fear their reaction? Well, because my worth's never been in their hands. My worth has always been in who God says I am. And God's fingerprints are all over me. And so He's the one who's made me. He's the one who loves me. I had worth and value before I ever said or did anything. I need to take my worth back out of their hands. Because they're just another fallen, broken human being. They never created anybody. And so as I was writing all this sort of stuff down, I was going, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that feels better. And I also worked out that actually there's so much going on in my head. I really just need to let them own whatever response they want to give me. And so the challenge I had, what's the challenge? If I absorb this truth, how will that make difference? What will I do now? And I said, well, now now the challenge before me is to actually say what I need to say and let their response be their responsibility. Now, the thing that happened that was quite interesting was I did that one evening. I then went back to class the next day, and I was in the midst of class. And I thought, man, this class is quiet. Why is this class so quiet? And then I realized I was... The chatter in my brain, all my second guessing of what people are thinking about me, it just subsided. And so it was quiet, not because everyone else was quiet, but my brain was quieter. I thought, oh, I like this. Now, there are other times when I've done the journaling, and I've gone, yeah, that's the truth, and I've really got to side with it, because it's taking me a lot longer to believe it. And so the transformation just took a lot longer. It was a bit slower. As I learnt to side with the truth against the feeling. And as I did that, the change still keeps coming. So my friends, I want you to understand that the reason why you're feeling and acting and being a certain way is because underneath the surface, in the basement, you're believing something. If you simply operate out of your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, you'll justify yourself. You'll think this is just the way I am. And heaven forbid, you'll say this is just my personality type. Did it ever occur to you your personality type is just a reflection of your tendencies based on the programming of your basement? Now that's flipped some of you out. My friends, I am quickly running out of time, and I realize I have sped through this, and I may have simply just confused you more than helped you. And if that's the case, I apologize. But are there any questions you want to ask me? Oh, that's got you, yeah. And do you know anyone here do Strength Finders? Yeah, let me really mess with you. Your strengths may very well just be a survival kit. Yeah, they will be a strength, but if you thought you could not act in that strength, Would that devastate you, or could you be okay? If it devastates you, it's a survival kit. That messes with people. I like StrengthFinders, by the way.
That's the Gallup survey.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, personalities. Often what we say is a personality is actually just the categorizing of our tendencies based on the basement level programming. And we've never explored or challenged the programming. So of course we're always like this. Now there's wonderful things about personality profiles and tendencies, but they are not the full description of who you are and who you have to be. They are not a prison sentence, my friends. But that's getting off the topic. You're naughty. You shouldn't do that. Was there any questions about what we were looking at just now when I was talking about the journaling process? That means, what am I going to do now? If I grabbed a hold of truth, the truth that I have, what am I going to do differently? And so for me, the challenge was, I'm going to say what I need to say, and I'm not going to guess what other people are thinking. It may be that I'm going to have those conversations, and I'm not going to worry about what they'll say back to me. That could be the challenge. I'll go ask for what I need and see what happens. So guys, what I want you to do, because what I was going to get you to do was actually do it now, but that's going to take another 20, 30 minutes. But what I do want you to do is I want you to give this a go and try doing at least 3 journals this week. I had to do this exercise each night for 3 weeks. By the end of it, I feel like I was making up feelings. But when you think about a situation, a circumstance that has got a feeling, it's got to be contextualized. It's got to be from an event. Write down the feeling and follow your thoughts down to see what you find. If nothing else, just be aware that the reason why you're operating the way you are is because of beliefs underneath the surface. Anything else that you wanted to ask before we finish up?
Is this going to be online? You know,
the talking, I'm recording now. So, yeah, if you fell asleep there, you can go back and you can have a look. But also, I'd get you to have a look at the list of some of the lies, just to get familiar with them. Yeah. Yep.
Then you might not even be able to imagine what the people
would say. Yep. Another thing that I will say here is, I see it as, what lens do I need to put on that will help me to see this better? What would if I felt differently, so if you're feeling anxious in a situation and you've just believed it all your life, ask yourself the opposite. If I felt calm in the situation, what would I be believing right now? If I felt like I could go and talk to you in the conflict and we could get through this, what would I be telling myself? What would I be believing that's different? If I felt okay about being intimate or having a hug and resting in that, what would I be telling myself that would be different? So you focus it from the positive point of view and dig it out that way. Or you give me a call and I'll help you. Because really what this is, and I better put this disclaimer in, this is about helping you just to become a little bit healthier, to do some self-care. You see, everyone expects that you'll clean your teeth every day. But no one expects you to do your own root canals. And so there's the general activity of life. This is just doing your brain brushing. I need to clean up my thinking. But there will be some places, some things that are just tricky and you get stuck. And you actually need help with that. You can't do it by yourself. So just see this as a self-care exercise rather than a surgery exercise.
So say someone does this and they've gone through under feelings, they've been dealing with all of those things, they've gone down to the basement. Can you just, I don't know, throw out some words or phrases? What does that person look like? Say you did it for 10 years and you get quite good at it.
Oh, well, okay, well, I'll do it this way. If you imagine, think of yourself without any insecurities, baggage that you've got, you're just feeling free. So you with freedom. Could you get a sense of what that's like? Nah. No, but in many ways, what it is, it's this is about people will fear because who will I become? Or what would it look like? But really, it's still you, the essence of who you are, but with freedom. What it looks like is that you don't have the dark days that have been plaguing you. You don't have yourself being beaten up by your moods regularly. You don't have write-off days. I just don't want to think about that day ever again. You don't have situations and difficult relationships that you can't think yourself through to find a constructive way forward. Doesn't make you perfect. It just makes you healthy. And you can start to love your neighbor as yourself when you do this stuff. Because you're no longer getting defensive and all bound up about you. I don't know. Does that help? Excellent. First bit was rubbish. Just rubbish.
Okay.
Matey.
Hey, would you recommend to use this as a tool when walking with someone? So then you talk them through it and you support them through this or not?
Yeah, as long as you've done it yourself. Well, and also as long as the other person's giving you permission to do this. So it's the sort of thing, mate, you seem to be really struggling with that. Could I just ask you a few questions and let's see if we can dig down and see what's going on? Yeah, absolutely. So the one I showed you about finding your bruise and also doing this once you do it, this is, with small c, this is also a way that you can counsel people because you are counseling people. If you're a mother, a father, a friend, If you're someone who has someone else in your life, you'll be counseling them at some point. This is just giving you a few more tools to be able to do that. Yeah?
What does it mean by it's dangerous to become an adult?
It means that if I have to grow up and take responsibilities, I don't like responsibility. Responsibilities are going to trap me. Responsibilities are going to be boring. They're going to be horrible. I just want to have fun. I just want to have a party. I just want to be a Peter Pan. I just want to fly and do what I like. I don't want to take responsibility. Who would want that? That sucks. Yes, let's clarify. And that's a lie. That's not good. No, that's right.
Yeah, that's true.
You see, freedom isn't just doing what you want to do. Freedom is being able to choose your response. And maybe I'll finish with this as an explanation of freedom. Earlier in my married life, I did the shopping. So I'd have my shopping cart, I'd go through, I'd put the groceries in, I'd do all of that. And after doing this stuff, I noticed that as I was doing the shopping, I would cut people off, I would push in front of them, I'd move past them. And I remember thinking, now, hang on a second, that's not who you are, Richard. You usually wait for people. You're usually more courteous than that. And what I realized was the reason why I was courteous was because my worth was in their hands. I wouldn't want them to think bad of me. I wouldn't want them to think that I was being rude. I wouldn't want them to think down on me. So in fact, I wasn't being courteous for their sake. It was all for my sake. And I was being bound by that belief. I couldn't choose a different response. Whereas now, when I realize my worth's not in your hands, my worth is in my hands and who God says I am, then if I'm in a hurry and I have to get past you, I have to get past you, no problem. Now, I realized that the way I was doing it probably wasn't helpful, and I realized I now had the choice to be courteous or be a jerk. I could choose. Now, that was my freedom. And my freedom under God was to choose what's appropriate here. You see, freedom isn't just doing what you want. That's actually being a slave to your feelings. Freedom is having the option to choose something different. Interesting, eh? Well, my friends, you've been a lovely audience. You've sat with me well. And I feel like I've just left you with a really big one. So if you need some help to process that, please feel free to talk to me. I'm going to stick around like I usually do. I might grab a drink of water, but if you do want to have a yak with me, feel free to do that. And now I'm going to hand back to me.
So you've got
these... Oh, if people want to keep touch base with me, I've had some people ask about it. There's a few things. One is the name will change soon, but if you're with Facebook, go to Living Wisdom Christchurch, and I often do a daily insight. If you want to email me, you can email me at strength@clare.net.nz. There's my cell phone number. Some people have asked about counselling, but I'm going back to Christchurch. I do phone counselling and Skype counselling as well. And I could also refer you to people in this local area. That's really what I think. And on the sheet, if you wanted to know, I wanted to have more from me, there's also a resource list here of a number of seminars that I've done and talks that I've done. So if you're interested in any of those, let me know. Thank you, Mick.
Well, this is...